with public comments. I would love to hear any public comments that people have, and we could learn from you or anything that you would like to share.
Well, and just a quick reminder. Go ahead, Trudy.
Thanks, Trish. Thank you.
Oh.
Can everyone, hi, you guys. How are you guys doing?
Hi.
Can all you guys please type your name in the chat box so that I'll have a kind of a sign, so I can type up a sign-in sheet, kind of like a roll call? Thank you guys so much.
Sure.
I also wanted to remind everybody that this meeting is being recorded for posting on our website.
Good. Thank you.
This is Leanne. I wasn't able to access this on my phone. I don't know why, but my phone was just not going to Microsoft Teams. So I'm joining over the phone. So I don't have the chat function, but I am present.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Leanne.
Great. Any public comments, please?
Darla?
Thank you. I just wanted to share that our legislative reception is happening later this month, and the exact date is bring. Mona, do you have the date? It's on Zoom, so I'll send out the invite to Trish so you guys can forward it off to you.
It's
so
January 27th.
The reception we usually have every year for our legislators. And then the other thing is that we will be doing a over Zoom training on the notebook and all the issues that we'll be addressing this year legislatively on January the 29th, and that will be over Zoom. So we'll be sending that to Trish as well. Next week for our housing meeting, we're going to be addressing ADUs, and we're going to have some expertise coming in to share about their experience in doing ADUs, multiple ADUs, and what that looks like for them. And maybe we can take on some of those things. And we also have DDA coming to present to families next Tuesday as well. So lots of things coming up.
Mona, I have the legislative reception on the 27th. I know that you put the 20th in chat. Do I have it wrong?
They changed the date. It was originally set as the 20th, and they changed it to the 27th because the 20th is inauguration.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you both for checking on those dates because I'd forgotten.
Okay.
All right. Any other public comments? Not hearing any, I think we'll turn it over to our guest, Anna, from the Washington State Disabilities Rights and Mobility Initiative. If you could share with us what is happening.
Great. Can everyone hear me all right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Terrific. Hi, everyone. So my name is Anna Zivartz. I work for Disability Rights Washington. I've been there for a couple of years. I formerly worked with the Rooted in Rights team, which is the video advocacy program. And this fall, I got to launch my DREAM program, which is a transportation-focused program focused on improving transportation access for folks in Washington State. Working on transit and paratransit and sidewalks and, mostly focusing on access for folks who don't have reliable access to cars and can't drive. I'm a low vision person myself, and so this is something that's also personal for me. And having grown up here in Washington State, I think there's a lot more our state could be doing to make all our communities accessible for everyone. So excited about this project. We, to sort of launch the initiative, we are doing a story mapping project where we are collecting interviews with people from around the state, trying to include people from every legislative district who don't have reliable access to cars. And so A lot of disabled folks fit into this category, but we're not just limiting it to disabled folks. We also want to hear from other folks for whatever reason, you know, can't drive or don't drive. And so right now we've done about 40 interviews. They've been wonderful. It's been really great to hear so many different voices and perspectives from different corners of the state. And we are continuing to do those interviews with the intention of launching this map sometime, hopefully in the next month. And the idea is that we'll help just draw attention and visibility to the disability community, to non-drivers, and to, you know, raise their profile in the hopes of perhaps getting some more funding, or at least retaining funding for transit and paratransit and sidewalk maintenance and all the things that we need to be able to get around our communities. I can actually show you guys, if you want, I'll paste a link in the chat of where, if you know anyone who wants to sign up and do an interview with us, they can sign up. It's a quick, you know, 15-20 minute interview. We can do it over the phone or over Zoom. And then we write up a little summary of their story and share it with them to make sure that everything is correct, and then put it up on the story mapping website. The story map is not public yet, but let's see if this will work. Let's see, I think I can share with you guys. Let's see. Is this working? Ooh. Are you able to see? Yes. Okay, cool. So this is still in a bit of draft form. We're still collecting some of the stories, but you can see we've gotten quite a few from all over the state. And, you know, we have a little photo and then some quotes and a profile of the person and their story and how they get around and what they find the biggest barriers are to getting around their communities, what they'd like to see changed, what they like about, you know, not driving, what they like about riding transit or paratransit. It's exciting. I think we'll probably have close to 100 of these little profiles when we're done. So we'll go ahead and stop sharing that. If I can figure out how to do that now. There we go. So are there any questions about what we're doing or about what we're hoping to do in the future? I'm happy to answer those. If there's anyone here who wants to ask me more later, too, I'll put my contact information in the chat box as well.
It looks like there is a question in the chat from Bill Bauman, who's one of our local mobility transportation providers here. The question is, are you including seniors who are homebound and no longer have the ability to provide their own transportation? And Bill, I think feel free to elaborate if you need to.
Please.
I'll start answering, Bill, and then if you want to jump in and ask me any more, feel free. But yes, definitely, we are including seniors in this and a lot of other folks who are paratransit users. Who, you know, for whatever reason, you know, aren't able to use fixed route transit, and can't drive. So yes, we would love to hear some more stories from seniors. I also, you know, I'm personally really curious to hear more from folks. I know that a lot of, you know, paratransit and community transit services have pivoted to doing meal delivery, and I think that's awesome to give people that flexibility. But I'm curious to hear from folks too, what they hope for coming out of the pandemic, if they're missing being able to go places, or if the delivery options are really a better choice, and sort of how we can help shape policy moving forward based on what people want. So.
Anna, when I first, hey Bill.
Hey, so I wanted to just say, sorry to cut you off, Walt. Thank you for answering my question. And the reason I was curious is we've focused a lot recently on seniors who are rural residents and don't have access to transit as your urban residents do, or don't have access to paratransit services, mm-hmm. and are being urged to age in place. Mm-hmm. And so not only is transportation vitally important to access medical appointments, grocery stores, social services, whatever, but when you lose your ability to provide your own transportation and you live far apart from other people and services, you lose access to your community. Yeah. And so that's something that we found to be very important, is providing that ability to access community, whether that's in form of sort of a shuttle service where you're talking with community members, neighbors, peers, as you travel to your destinations, or you have some set destination where you can congregate with community members. Saying this during a pandemic is a little challenging, or trying to do that in practice during a pandemic is a little challenging. But that's one of the things I would like to see when we come out on the other side, is more space for community interaction for folks who no longer have the ability to provide their own transportation. Thank you.
No, I think that's really good. We definitely talked to some folks who, you know, for whatever reason, either have, you know, disability and can no longer drive in some rural, or can't afford to live close to transit or paratransit, right, and are outside of those, where that's available. And yeah, the community transit options are what is, what is there, and how do we make those work? And I've heard from, you know, some community transit folks that, you know, because a lot of the volunteer drivers are also seniors, the pandemic has been really challenging for everything. And so how we rebuild a system coming out of this. I think that community piece is so essential. I think switching to our everything is just delivery. I don't know, the isolation for that, for me as a non-driver, feels really horrible. But I'd be curious to hear from folks about how we can create those places for people to connect.
Anna, a question that I had, I thought I had read a position paper or some type of discussion regarding this project, and that's part of the reason why I brought it forward. Has the group established a set of priorities or objectives for this particular study, or is it still wide open and still wide open, I guess, is the only
thing. Yeah, I mean, this particular story gathering project is wide open. We didn't want to, you know, prescribe what we are looking for, because we wanted to have it be very much a listening process, and also not attach it to any particular piece of legislation, so it could be not lobbying, that it could just be seen as you know, a voice, you know, allowing the community to have more representation, more of a voice. I think, you know, moving forward, we, you know, generally are interested in seeing funding increased for transit, paratransit, walking, rolling, solutions in our state. And so, you know, broadly, I think we're going to be pushing for that. I think this legislative session, you know, it's hard to say. I don't have a clear picture yet of what that's going to look like. And so we don't have, that completely nailed down, but, we've also been involved in Seattle in a number of local efforts, where we're, you know, involved in Tacoma too, you know, pushing for funding for particular local projects that would increase access. And I think that may be a model we look toward, just because it allows us to engage people directly in an issue they care very deeply about, and build community and build connections and build, skills that way. So. If there are, you know, particular gaps, particular projects, particular issues that are local, I think that may be a way for us to have a lot of impact without getting bogged down in Olympia and whatever the process is going to be this year.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Other folks, Ted, I can see you moving around. Are you on mute, Ted?
I'm on mute. Hi, I just got here. Sorry, I'm just coming from class, so I didn't hear the question. But I'll be on mute. I'll listen to you. I'll listen to your wisdom there.
Good, good. Are there other folks that have questions for Anna, or points that you want to maybe make now that we have her in front of us as a captured video? Would like to share some concerns or issues, and this goes well for the guest as well.
Well, Anna, you mentioned that you were open to having people who are interested in being interviewed contact you. Do you have a flyer or anything? We'd be happy to, you know, send that out to our providers and to the community if you wanted to send that to me.
Yeah, that would be awesome. It's actually this link here. I'm going to paste it again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oops. Let me see if I can type this. but yes, there's a form. I also pasted my contact information. And so, you know, it's fine to have people contact me directly if it's easier than using that form.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. And we should have the story map, you know, we're going to allow people to continue to add to it. It's not going to be, you know, done. And so we will be releasing it publicly, hopefully in the next week or two, maybe a little longer. And so if it's easier to wait for that, so people can really see concretely what they're signing up for, that's fine too. And then there'll be a way to submit your story on that launch, as well. So.
Okay.
And I really appreciate. Yeah.
Patrick, I have one of our advisory board members here, Patrick, who has a question. He's on the phone with me.
Yeah. Well, it's more of a kind of question comment. I know that there's the area that I'm from, transportation is a huge area, you know, it's a huge thing here because I live in the Woodland Clark County area, and it always seems like you've either got to rely on a family member or... they do have, like, alternative transportation is through CAP that'll take you to 99th Street to connect with, the mainline buses and, connector and, Sebring. But, it seems like it's very limited though, because, like, if there's other resources for this area, you know, it's a high demand because a lot of people are like, well, where's the transportation? We need help with jobs. We need help giving people to and from. And it always seems like it's just a huge, huge issue because I have people approach me about this, several times throughout the week. I mean, it, you know, and I've had concerns related to people I work with and different people that have worked in different jobs. They've said the same thing. There's just basically a high need for that, you know, extremely high need for the Woodland area because there's not enough of that to go around.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's amazing. I mean, I feel like in no community where I've talked to folks who can't drive, you know, are there people saying like, oh, transportation here is perfect or great or doesn't need to be better? I think there is, you know, this need throughout the state, because there's been, you know, profound, you know, ways that our state decides to fund and doesn't fund, like because of the gas tax and where that money can be spent. The transit funding is limited. It really is. So.
Yeah.
Hoping we can shift that.
Other folks, does anybody else have a comment or concern or question for Anna while we have her here?
I have a question that's off topic. And Anna, I appreciate you coming and sharing. The mobility issue is so important. One of the things that came up today, and I guess this is more a request that you just take this back to DRW, is the parents across the state are needing a training on how to do guardianship reporting. Mm-hmm. And we're having a hard time getting that from attorneys that are in business because they want the business. And so what we need is just some generic training. So if you could carry that back to DRW for us, we'd really appreciate that.
Sure. Yeah. Is there, if you want to email me your contact info, that would be helpful. And then I can pass that along. Cause it does seem like the kind of thing that, since we're not in the business of making money off that, perhaps could be helpful with providing. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Is your contact information in the chat?
It's in the chat, yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Cool.
I had one more question. As I was briefly looking through the disability mobility page, it seems that a lot of the projects are centered around the Puget Sound area. Are there any plans to expand projects in other locations in the state of Washington?
As far as things that we're working on. Oops, you're on mute again.
Just like future initiatives.
Yeah, I mean, this story collecting, I think, I mean, that in particular does look Puget Sound focused, and it's because we are trying to get equal representation per legislative district, which is going to be population-based. And so that's why that looked so heavily Puget Sound, though I am still pushing hard to get us more folks from the east side. On the project work, I am based in Seattle, and my team was here in Seattle, and so I have been pushing hard for us to hire staff that are in other places because it's hard to do local work when you're not there. We've done, you know, a few things in Tacoma because that's easy enough to, well, kind of easy enough to get back and forth to. But I would really like us to be able to figure out a model where we could, contract with or collaborate with folks in other parts of the state who can be the point people on local issues, right? We were trying to do some work over in Spokane around snow removal on sidewalks and around transit fares. And it's just, you know, it's hard to be able to manage all those relationships when you're not in person. A little bit easier in the pandemic, but yeah, it's something I would love for us to do more. And if you have ideas or want to be involved, let me know, because I'm looking for people to work with in other parts of the state.
Well, I imagine there's, Trish, I'm kind of looking at you, there are similar groups as our Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. Yeah. And there's also area agencies on aging as well.
Absolutely. And there's the Association of County Human Services that might be really helpful. So I can connect with you, let me connect you to the co-chairs of that group, because that's county coordinators like myself from all of the 39 counties in the state.
Oh, cool.
That should give you at least a touch point to maybe develop relationships with more of the counties than just Puget Sound. There is a large disconnect between the other parts of the state, and it seems to be, from my perspective, the amount of attention that seems to be given to the Puget Sound area as compared to the central part of the state or southern part of the state, eastern part of the state.
Yeah, no. And Clark County is actually something where, because I think from the School for the Blind, I actually have talked to a lot of folks in your area. And I know, you know, one particular project that's going to get a lot of attention is the I-5 bridge project. And so, yeah.
I'm sorry to laugh, but I've been hearing about that for, 20 years, 25 years? Anyway. Is there any other questions, any other concerns? I would really encourage folks to go to the link that Anna gave us as a way to be able to share your stories or the stories of some of the parents and families that are here in Southwest Washington. And I appreciate, Anna, the opportunity to share our points of view as well.
Yeah, thank you all, and I hope you can't hear the drumming that's happening downstairs. The boys. So I'm going to get off, if that's all right.
Thanks.
But it's really great to meet you all, and feel free to reach out.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Bye.
Hi. Okay, the next order of business is Darla with, hey, Meredy.
Hi.
With the legislative update, I believe.
Okay, let's see. Now, I just had those papers. I was just messing with them.
Sorry, I'm probably remiss in my duty of sharing the agenda here. But we do have the chair and vice chair election update.
I'm sorry. skipped over that.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
We do have a couple of nominees, and I don't know if Ted or Patrick, Ted and Patrick were our nominating committee, so would either of you like to say who our new nominees are?
Did we say that one was Susan, correct?
That's right.
For chair, and then for vice chair, I'm the one that suggested. I can't think of her name. I can't say it very well.
Lindy. Lindy Treese.
Yeah. I recommend her for vice chair.
Yes, and I talked with both of them. Go ahead, Ted.
And we thank them very much for volunteering.
Yes.
That's right. And two competent chair and vice chair that are both willing to serve. So thank you. We do have a little bit of a hitch in our giddy up. When I approached the counselor's office about reappointment for Susan, they did say that we need to have a posting open because we do also have another vacant position since Adrian Cortez is no longer on the advisory board. He resigned. And so we need to actually have that posting open for 30 days. So we're recommending that we postpone the actual election until our March meeting when we should have everybody reappointed. And then we also should have our new advisory board member appointed then as well.
And you guys, you're not allowed to change your mind these next 30 days. Thank you very, very much for serving.
Yes, thank you.
Any formal action on this, Trish?
You're still muted, Susan.
There we go.
I said my your gratitude is subject to the approval of the Board of Commissioners. If they say I can't be on the board anymore, then you guys are going to have to find somebody else.
That's right.
I think they have PDD because I bring a dog with me when I go see them.
So I don't think that there's actually any action at this time. We were hoping we might be able to do the election, but we'll just postpone that until the March meeting.
Great.
Okay. It's not going to be by 8 o'clock tonight.
No, it's not.
No. We might need that to be at the Capitol here today. Or
hope
not, anyway.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Thank you, Ted. I mean, thank you, everyone that participated in that. And I think the next step right now is to talk a little bit about the comprehensive plan update.
Sure. I just wanted to give the advisory board a little bit of an update of where we are with the comprehensive plan. So just we are due for the five-year plan update. So it's year five. So this will go through from 21 through 25. And we're in the process. We have been working on revisions and updates to the comprehensive plan. The board has approved a kind of an outreach plan to get information from the community about the priorities that are listed in the comprehensive plan. So we're also working on that with IT, and we'll be doing a series of interviews in order to get some targeted information. And we're hoping for publication of the new plan this spring. So that's the basic update. Are there any questions about that? And you will see the plan. There will be a little bit more for you all to do before the plan is finalized. So just so you know, I'm not totally off and running with it just yet. But we still have a little bit more work to do.
Good.
Do we have any word on when we can meet again as a work committee anyway? I mean, and I know these public meetings, is there any possibility of us meeting face to face anytime soon for the work committee?
Well, the governor just did a press conference yesterday and has announced a new reopening plan for Washington So all counties are back in phase one as of right now. And then there are, criteria for advancing to the next phase of reopening. And, really those measures are continue to be cases. We in Clark County still are in the high range of cases of COVID-19, though vaccinations have began to roll out. So I think that we're optimistic about that continuing. So there's no official date as of yet as far as when we'll be able to come back and meet in person. And the county and our, you know, kind of government workers are kind of on the last round of coming back, just because of the ability to do the work remotely. So I think that remote work continues to be recommended where possible.
Do you have an update? I know it's not our agenda, but was there an update on the hospital where COVID was found?
Yeah, I definitely heard about that in the news. I would encourage you to look at the Board of Health website or the Clark County Public Health website. They have the most current and up-to-date information about the COVID-19 response and what's happening in the community. But yeah, I had definitely heard that there were cases there, not only patients, but also staff.
Yeah, that started it.
Mm-hmm. I've got something to add to that one, Trish, if that's what's on me.
What's that, Patrick?
I have something to add to that, if I may.
Sure.
I just recently learned that there's a facility, assisted living facility, and also a retirement community that's in Vancouver. It's called Prestige Retirement Home and Community Assisted Living. There are, as I know, there's at least about 5 cases in there with COVID-19. There's 2 residents and 1 staff person that have tested positive. There may be more. No, I know because I have a mother that resides there, and she's told me that they're doing everything necessary, you know, to protect the residents. They're offering COVID tests. They're doing, you know, every other situation they can as far as, you know, making sure that it doesn't spread or it becomes an issue. I don't know of any other facilities, but I do know of that particular one that I am aware of for sure. You know, so that I am aware of. And so I'm just, you know, I'm glad I pass that along.
Yeah, I think I think activity continues to be high in our region.
Right, it is.
Does anybody know, Trish, Darla, anyone, what the vaccination schedule will be for those individuals with developmental disabilities and cognitive disabilities?
So we asked that question on Monday at our statewide meeting. And what we were told at that point in time was that individuals who experience developmental disabilities are in that phase 2 when we continue to, when it's more open to everyone else, that they're not a specific group, such as the elderly or the first responders are. I will let you know we still continue to push on that, because the data has showed that individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities are 3 to 4 times more likely to have a significant issue due to COVID than other individuals. So they're running about where the seniors are running as far as issues.
Underlying conditions like health issues, like diabetes, their high blood pressure, is there a certain age group that they may be sooner or later vaccine that's going to be given for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities?
We think it will be given at some point in time, Patrick. We're just not sure of the timing yet.
Okay, yeah. Okay, because I know I have some underlined in. I'm just kind of wondering what they're looking at for timeline.
Last I heard, it was probably phase two. Whatever that references.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions before we move on to the legislative agenda that I tried pushing a couple minutes ago? Sorry again. Darla?
Okay, so legislative update today is really focused on the governor's budget. So the governor's budget came out before Christmas. Don't remember the exact date right now. And the operating budget looked fairly good. There's 15 new beds funded for SOLA, which is the state operated living alternatives, for children ages 20 years and under. They've added 100 new slots to the Children's Intensive In-Home Behavior Supports waiver. They're funding high school graduates and adding them onto the basic waiver. The adult family home agreement was funded. The in-home care provider agreement was funded. The agency provider agreement was funded. COVID costs, including state-operated costs around COVID-19-specific facility and remote support tech, was funded. In-home personal protective equipment, so the PPE for the in-home providers, was funded. There was increased for pre-readmission screening and resident review. So that's the PASSARs for people in nursing homes. A support peer mentor program was funded, one at each of the institutions, the RHCs. Fund claims for the differences in the shared benefit equation, increased residential and institutional personal needs allowance, which really needs to be done. They network the risk mitigation, replace old networking systems that pose significant risk to operations. So we know that technology around DDA, especially central office, but also the other entities outside of central office, have not been able to keep their equipment and stuff updated as they've needed to. And so this really addresses that to really kind of address some of those, as it says, risk mitigation. Develop a plan to reduce the footprint of Rainier School, including two people who live. That doesn't really make sense, but they're reducing the footprint of Rainier. Maintaining developmental screenings, extension for community health care outcomes, and internet connectivity and digital learning devices for children with special needs. So overall, we were highly pleased with this. And it all looked good. And we were expecting really negative budget proposal. As you remember, the governor's budget has to be balanced. And we were expecting extreme hardships, and some of the things that they had put out as potential cuts were very scary. None of that was in the operating budget. But then when we started looking at the capital budget, there are 41 things that are funded, 41 different funding lines specifically to the RHCs, that is Faircrest, Rainier, Lakeland, Yakima Valley, 41 different things with huge funding allotments. Thank you, Trish, for putting that up. I'm not going to read through them all, but as you go down, you'll just see all the different things. And if you recall back in the operations budget, it says they want to shrink the footprint at Rainier. When we looked at our data, we have less than 500 individuals that are currently living in our RHCs. And 75 of them currently have requested placement in the community and have not been able to move because there's not currently resources and space in the community for them to move to. Yet there's all of this additional funding that's going into the RHCs. So that is a huge concern that we will be talking to every legislator about during the upcoming legislative session, is why are we rebuilding something that we have no intention of using in the future the federal government's moving away from using these in the future. And we know that there's a huge significant lack of affordable housing and services in the community. And yet, as you'll see on that capital budget proposal, there's not a single community, there's no funds that are going into the community to build any community capacity at all. Every one of those funding options goes back to the RHCs. So we were highly concerned about that.
Darla, what, which legislator is the chair of what, the Appropriations Committee, or would be the appropriate point person regarding these capital projects?
You know, I should know that because we were talking about it on Monday, but I don't remember off the top of my head, but I know that on in our local community, Senator Rivers and Senator Wilson are both on those committees. And so locally, those would be good individuals for us to speak to, as well as Senator Braun, who's in the 20th district, which dips down into Clark County as well.
I think it's important from my perspective that we really challenge those capital suggestions, because I think that I'm not sure if they're nothing more than just trade, you know, that could be used, you know, well, okay, we'll give in on this and this and this in exchange for that and that and that. Maybe I'm just being overly cautious, but like you said, why would the governor continue to identify repairs and construction for an approach that has been proven antiquated and also too expensive to operate?
Exactly. We have approximately, and I'm not remembering exact numbers, but approximately 48,000 individuals in our state who are currently receiving DDA services, and less than 500 of them are in the RHC. That's, you know, and when you look at this amount of funding that's going there, we want the individuals in the RHCs to be safe, right? Absolutely, we want them to be safe. But why are we putting so much money into the buildings and keeping the buildings the way they are when what is the plan for 10 years from now? What's the plan 15 years from now? Why are we not working toward the future instead of working toward the past?
Right. Other people have any things they wanted to add to this discussion?
I just look back at my notes from the advisory board's meeting with Senator Rivers, and she said Linda Wilson is the ranking member on Ways and Means, and Senator Rolfus was the other person that she recommended talking to as well.
Thank you.
Have we had yet the virtual chat with Senator Wilson yet?
No, but I know Trudy is working on scheduling that, and I think that she was narrowing in. So you should be hearing, if you haven't heard yet, you should be hearing shortly from Trudy about when that is.
Okay.
Sorry, while you were asking about Senator Wilson...
Trudy, you're here.
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I was typing up the list and listening, but I have my notes here. I just have to find them to see if I can give you an update on Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Trudy.
Sorry, can't carry on. I'm just looking for my list. Maybe sure. I can give you an update. You were asking about Senator Wilson, right, Walt?
Yes, please.
Okay, sorry, I'm trying to see if I can find my...
Do you have some more for us?
Well, you know, there's a lot of meat to dig into that. I think, I don't know who was putting the documents up, but they're going to be emailing them out. We were very pleased that with the forecast and stuff, the budget wasn't nearly as bad as we thought it was going to be. There is some interesting things they're doing with the funding. And as we know, the governor's budget is just the beginning.
And so we'll really see what happens with the Senate and the House. But I was so excited when I saw the operations budget and very appalled when I saw the capital budget. And so I think we just really need to be aware and keep an eye on that. So, oh, and the reception, well, we already talked about that. Reception's the 27th, and I'll send that information out too. All of the session this year is going to be virtual. So advocacy days, meeting with legislators, all of that's going to be online. And we will be doing, I think it's on the 29th, we're going to be doing a training on how to interact with your legislators and where the important issues are this year. So I think it actually gives a lot of us an opportunity to interact in ways that maybe we couldn't take an entire day and go up to Olympia, but we can hop on for, you know, a 15-minute appointment once a week or, you know, however often we need to really keep track of what's happening up there.
I think it's a wonderful opportunity for people to be able to connect with their legislators. Yeah. You know, I know that just, you know, taking a day out and traveling up to Olympia can be a hardship. And I'm really interested to see how it all goes this year. It'll be interesting, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You were asking about Senator Wilson. I scheduled a meeting with Senator Wilson on January 14th, and it's from 2:30 to 2:45, and I sent out an email regarding that. Mm-hmm. They haven't sent the meeting link yet or the phone number to call in, but it's going to be on January 14th, 2:30 to 2:45. Would you like to be on that meeting?
Well, I'm sorry, but I actually have a volunteer conflict at that time.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be able to. Do we have any members of the board that can spare the time?
Merity is going to.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Merity.
Is there anybody else that we can guilt trip? I mean, invite to attend? Was that you, Ted?
Patrick, was that you?
No.
Not me.
No, that was a joke. That was a joke, Patrick. But we're talking about the meeting with Senator Wilson coming up on the 14th. And if you wanted to join that, we could figure out how to make that happen.
I spoke with Patrick today about the meeting, and I gave him the phone number for him to call in.
Do we know what our time frame is for that?
Okay, thank you.
Oh, Trudy, it sounds like you and Trudy talked about it.
I spoke to you about today on the phone, and I gave you two dates.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
From 2:30 to 2:45.
Yeah, it's the one that I spoke to you today about, and it's the one that's on the 14th from 2:30 to 2:45, and I gave you the call-in number and the code, and I gave you also the phone number for Harris and the call-in, you know, the call-in number and code.
Yeah.
And the date and time.
Merity, you were going to say something?
No, I just thought that it was... They're really cutting them short this year. I mean, normally we could get like a half hour, but 15 minutes, so it's going to have to be really succinct.
Yeah, and they're sticking to that time. They're sticking to that 15 minutes or the 20 minutes or the 30 minutes. So they said you really have to, I guess, you know, if I don't know if you guys kind of talk about it ahead of time to decide who's going to say what, but maybe 5 minutes a piece for – the one coming up that's going to be just 15 minutes.
Yes, several I've been on that have said yes to, they're all 15 minutes.
One of them, that other one with Harris is 15 minutes too. I think there's one that's 20 minutes, which is the one with Larry Hoff.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All righty. Any other legislative insight, Darla, Trish?
It's going to be an interesting year.
Yeah,
Yeah. It's been an interesting year.
All righty. From my perspective, I'm not seeing if there's any other issues that we have. Do any of the board members have a particular thing that they want to raise, new business?
I'm not a board member, but I had one other piece of new business that I wanted to address. And that's just, we also were told that Evelyn Perez will be retiring this next coming up summer. And so she's the head of DDA. And so as we look at all the changes and different things that are coming, that's going to be a big change for us as well. It looks like they know who the interim's going to be, but then they'll have to open up the position to take applications.
Yeah. Okay.
Who is the interim going to be?
Debbie.
Okay.
Okay. Any other insight, wisdom? Okay. Well, I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
I just wanted to thank you all, the board members, as well as the rest of the people that attend these advisory board meetings. We're coming up on almost a year of doing these virtually, believe it or not. And, you know, I think that we've all had to have a learning curve. And so I just really, I think that this last year really shows the commitment to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to kind of hang with this, keep it going, and moving forward. So thank you, everybody. And welcome and to 2021.
Thank you, Trish, for your leadership, and Walt for yours as well. Record time, I think you're 6:15 only. Yeah, so I move to adjourn.
Okay, do I hear a second? All in favor, say aye.
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 Not very enthusiastic, but I'll take it. Thank you, everybody. Have a good evening.
Thank you, everybody.
Happy New Year, yeah, to everybody.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you,
Trish.
Okay.
Leanne, Larson.
Okay. Yep, that's it.
Exiting.
Bye, Patrick. Yep. I'll see you later.
Yeah.
Chris, phone.
Bye.
Bye.
Is now exiting.